Today's short story is The Character Strikes Back by Tom Palmer. It started on a Monday morning. I was just about to go to work at a school. That's what I remember most. It was just another normal day. Except it wasn't a normal day. Not by a long way. A normal day for me is either sitting down to write for 3 or 4 hours or visiting a school to do a talk. I'm an author, you see. I write books for children. My books are usually about football, but there's more to them than that. Some of them are thrillers or crime stories. Others are about families and friends. I have always thought that being an author was a good job, a brilliant job. And it is. It makes me happy. Normally. So long as one of my characters doesn't come alive and decide to hunt me down. But that's exactly what happened. The school visit that Monday was great. I talked, ran a quiz, held a penalty shootout, then took questions. It was during the question session that the day started to go a little bit weird. I was talking to 100 or so children who were sitting in an assembly with half a dozen teachers and teaching assistants at the back, 4 women and 2 men. The questions that the children asked were great. "Where did you get your ideas for foul play?" was the first question, coming from a girl in the front row. One of my series is called Foul Play. It's about a boy called Danny and his friend Charlotte and how they try to solve football crimes. "Well, I read about real-life crimes," I answered, "like people burgling footballers or Russian billionaires who are trying to murder the players. I research them on the internet. Once I've come across something that I think is really interesting, I make up stories based around the truth." "Do you use real names?" a boy asked me. "Oh no," I said. "I might use real events, but I always change people's names. I'd get into trouble otherwise." It was while I was answering that question that I noticed one of the teachers at the back. He was tall and athletic with dark curly hair and was wearing black jeans and a black jacket. He was staring straight at me. Something about him looked familiar, like I had seen him before. He looked angry, maybe a bit mad. "Just a teacher," I thought. And the children were asking me more about the research I do, so I forgot about him. When I write a book, I try to visit the place where it is set. So when I wrote a book about an Italian football club owner who was trying to make everyone in the world support his team, I went to Milan to find places I could use as a setting. It was the same when I went to Moscow. I wanted to make up a Russian billionaire who was trying to kill England players so Russia could beat England. I told the children about how I went to the poshest hotel in Russia to watch rich Russians and how they all had private armies with them, 4 or 5 armed men, all dressed in black. And how, when I was in this hotel, they had watched me and one of them even pointed his gun at me as a joke. This is all true, by the way. The children loved that. All the teachers seemed happy, but I did notice that the male teacher with dark hair was frowning at me. After my talk, one of the teachers kindly drove me to the station. Part of my talk is a penalty shootout, so I bring an inflatable girl with me and it's quite heavy. It weighs about twice as much as my daughter, who is 6. I got onto the train and started the book I was reading. Half an hour later, I looked out of the window. It was nearly dark and it was raining. Where I live, there are lots of hills. They are steep and, at dusk when the sun is disappearing, they go black like cut-out silhouettes. I love that part of the day. When the train came into Todmorden, where I live, I glanced at the remaining passengers. Most of them were people on their way home from work, in suits and long coats. There were 2 girls listening to the same iPod, and a man talking on his mobile phone in a loud voice. I had a quick look at everyone before getting off and found myself face to face with the man from the back of the school hall, the man in black. And he was looking straight back at me. I nodded some sort of a greeting, but he just kept staring. And immediately I felt like something was wrong. Maybe I'm paranoid because I write crime stories, but you don't usually see the same person in 2 different places on the same day. and if you do, they usually smile or nod back. As soon as the train stopped, I jumped off, hauling my huge bag over my shoulder. Now I had to walk. In the dark, in the rain, nearly a mile to my house. I walked quickly and I didn't look back. There was a wind driving up the main road in Todmorden, so I kept my head down. And when I got home, I went in quickly and shut the door and bolted it, still a little unnerved by the man on the train. Back to some normality. Food with my family, a cup of tea and a chat with my wife, a bedtime story for our daughter. Once she was asleep, I locked up. The same routine every night. Check the locks on the front and back doors, check the cooker is off, check that the rabbits and the hamster are still alive, read for half an hour, and then, just after I've switched the light off, I open the blind to make sure that the front gate is shut. And there he was, the man in black, standing on the road in the rain under a street light. Then, once he'd seen me, walking away, down the road, back into town. The first thing I did in the morning was look out onto the street again, just to see if the man in black was still there. He wasn't. "What are you looking at?" my wife asked. "I'm looking to see if the man who followed me home, was standing outside in the dark last night, is still there." I always tell my wife the truth, but she just laughed. Because I wasn't in a school that day, I had a nice breakfast with my wife and daughter. Then I took my daughter to school. Once she was there, I went into Todmorden to write. I wish I could write at home, but I can't. It's too easy to find other things to do at home, like putting the rabbit out on the grass, or washing up, or reading the post, anything except writing. So I go to a cafe in Todmorden. It's called The Bear, and it's right opposite the library. There I have to work, because there's nothing else to do. I ordered a coffee and started writing on my laptop. I was finishing a book called Captain Fantastic. It was the last book in my Football Academy series. When I'm writing, I often put things into the story that are new in my life. For instance, when I got a PSP, I included a FIFA tournament for the boys in the team in my book, Free Kick. Or when I got an iPhone, I gave one to Danny in the last Foul Play novel called Own Goal. So as the man in black was on my mind, I included him in the story. I had him hanging around the training ground being scary. He seemed like a good character to use. When I get into writing, I lose all sense of time. I'd been hammering away on my laptop for 2 hours when I felt like getting another drink, just to keep me going. So I got up to go to the counter. As I did, I glanced over at the library on the other side of the road. And there he was again, the man in black. When he saw me looking, he turned and went into the library. Suddenly, this felt serious. I knew I had to face him, find out what he was doing following me around. But first, I needed some facts. I phoned the school I'd been at the day before. "Hi, it's Tom, the author from yesterday." "Hello, Tom. Thanks again for a lovely day." "You're welcome," I said. "Do you mind if I ask you a question about yesterday?" "Fire away," the teacher said. "You know the teachers at the back, the one in black with the dark hair? Is he at your school today?" "Him?" the teacher said, surprised. "He's not a teacher, he's your publisher." "What?" I was feeling agitated now. I looked over at the library. The man, whoever he was still inside. "He said he was your publisher," the teacher clarified. "What?" I realised I must have shouted when I saw several other people in the cafe staring at me. I ended the phone call, paid quickly, and left. As I walked across the road and into the library, my head was spinning with questions. Who was this man? He certainly wasn't my publisher. Why was he at the school, on my train, and outside my house last night? And why was he in the library, my local library now? I marched into the library. Because I felt threatened, I decided to be strong. I could have run away home and closed all the curtains, but that wouldn't have done me any good. There were several people in the library, queuing to take books out, reading the newspaper, checking out DVDs and CDs, but there was no sign of the man in black. It's a lovely library, warm, friendly, and full of books about anything and everything. The librarian was standing at the counter. She said hello. "Hello," I said, then I lowered my voice. "Is there a man in here, dressed in black with dark curly hair?" "Oh, him," she replied. "He's just gone." I looked at the side door to the library. It was still swinging on its hinges. "He was looking at your books, in fact," she went on, pointing at a pile of books in the children's section. "Is he a friend of yours?" I shook my head. Then I went over to my books. There was a copy of Dead Ball there, my book about the Russian billionaire who tries to kill England players, and next to it, a book called A Russian Diary by a Russian journalist called Anna. I knew the book well. I'd borrowed it from the library when I was researching Russia. I had based my villain, the evil billionaire, on a man that I had read about in the book. Dmitry Borisov. She had written about how he was a ruthless businessman who was happy to murder his enemies, and that he had journalists killed who wrote bad things about him. Anna had been murdered herself, in Moscow, probably by Borisov. So why was this book sat here next to mine? I leafed through Anna's book as my mind tried to piece things together. I came to some photos in the middle. And then I saw it. A picture of Dmitry Borisov. And it was him, the man in black, the man who was following me. My heart started pounding so hard I felt sick. I had to get home, to look after my family, to get them away from Todenden until I knew what was going on. When I'd got home the night before, I told my wife everything. She was calm. She keeps my feet on the ground. She said my worries that a Russian madman was coming after me were probably in my imagination, but that if I wanted to go away for a while, that was fine. The following day, I was supposed to be touring North Yorkshire schools. I hate letting schools down, so we decided that my wife and daughter would go to her parents' house in the Midlands, and I'd head up to North Yorkshire to the school. I drove there early that morning. On the way, I tried out some of the techniques I have learned about being a detective. I am not a detective, and I have never been a detective, but one of the things I like to do when I'm writing the foul play books is learn about what I am writing about. For instance, in one of the books, Dead Ball in fact, Danny has to follow a footballer that he thinks is up to no good. He knows that there are special ways you can follow someone in public without being seen, so he goes to the library to find books about it. He learns things like, try to walk on the other side of the road to the person you are following, and that if the person you are following turns round, don't suddenly stop and look in a window, just carry on walking, even overtaking them if you have to. This way you can better avoid detection. I had also read about what to do to make sure you are not being followed by another car. 1. Drive really slowly to see if someone is driving slowly behind you. 2. Go round a roundabout several times. That way the person following you cannot continue without being spotted. 3. Turn off the motorway at the last moment without indicating. Dangerous, but you can see what people are up to. Anyway, I did all those things and it was clear to me that nobody was following me. Maybe I was making it all up in my head. I talked at 3 schools in North Yorkshire. 10 a.m, 11:30 a.m, and 2 p.m. Leaving the last school, I knew I needed somewhere to stay. I wasn't going home tonight, and I had already made my mind up where I would like to stay. In Middleham, a village I know well. When I was a kid, my mum and dad used to take me there for holidays every year. I drove to Middleham, still making sure I wasn't being followed. I wasn't. Once I had checked into the Black Bull, a pub at the bottom end of the square, I went for a run. I like running. I do it 3 or 4 times a week. I knew where I was going to run to, too. Up and along Penn Hill, one of the biggest hills in the area. I drove to the foot of the hill, did some stretching, and headed off. It wasn't easy. The first bit is steep, but once you are on the top, it is flat, so you can see for miles. And I had it all to myself. except for one other runner who was a couple of miles away coming in the other direction. There is a special reason I love Penhill. Both my parents' ashes are scattered up there. They died when I was quite young. I have this strange ritual. When I have a new book published, I take a copy up there and leave it for them to read. I had one with me today, the latest Foul Play book, Killer Pass. Anyway, I was running along thinking of nothing because I don't think when I run, watching the other runner coming closer and closer and thinking how it would be nice to say hello to a fellow runner, then carry on. And I was feeling good because of the book, and because I'd got away from home, and because my family were safe, and my wife's parents, and because I was starting to realise that this whole Russian thing probably was in my head. The wind was behind me too, carrying me along. I felt happy for the first time in a couple of days, until I saw the other runner come suddenly out of a dip.